Welcome to the Jennings Wire Online Magazine podcast series, where we feature interviews with top authors and experts. My name is Stacey Amaral Kaufman. I'm the radio director of Annie Jennings PR, the national firm behind the online feature magazine sensation, JenningsWire.com, a special community of bloggers and podcasters that is capturing the heart of America. There's nothing like it on the web, and we invite you to visit JenningsWire.com to discover the blogger that is just right for you. And our guest today is Kyle Hall, founder of Scholastica Tours, where literature is used as a base for tours of Italy, going beyond photo tourism to give tourists a more rewarding experience. So welcome, Kyle.
Hello, Tracy.
Now, what do you mean when you use the term photo tourism, and how does it relate to our idea of value within the travel industry?
Well, I think that if you go online and search for photo tourism, you actually find very quickly a use of the term that I think is actually great. There are professionals out there who will organize tours and bring you along to interesting destinations, and the entire goal is creating incredible photography. And I think that that's a very interesting use. But the second meaning that I think is a little bit less obvious, but unfortunately more widespread, is a sort of photo tourism that gives you a list of things that you have to have a photo of. And so you basically spend, you know, hundreds or thousands of dollars on your vacation. You take your time and effort and go. And when you get there, you are involved in sort of checking off the list. You know, okay, I got this photo, I got this photo, I got this photo. Now we're back on the bus. We're going to our next destination, et cetera, et cetera.
And, that's a lot of pressure.
It is a lot of pressure. And, you know, if you sit back and sort of watch at these cities, and I've sort of passed a lot of time in very touristic cities, you see the same pattern repeated over and over with each person. So each person comes, they take the same photo, and then they move on. And I think that the thing that gets lost there is sort of the context. You know, why is it that you even want to take that photo in the first place? Why are these places famous? You know, when did they come into existence? What was it like before they were here? And without that context, it just sort of leads me to ask, well, what are you really paying for? Is it really just for the photo? Is it really just a series of photo opportunities that sort of prevent you from ever looking at what you're, at what's in front of you? You know, you see these monuments, but you never really look at them.
Right. And so what's the difference seeing and looking? And I'm sure you see this all the time, obviously, if we're talking about Italy and Rome with all of the ancient history there. I'm sure you see it all the time, the Colosseum and the everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that really the difference between seeing something and looking at something can sort of be distinguished in terms of both time and really the goals. You know, seeing doesn't take any time at all. You can do it in a heartbeat. You can glance at something and see it. And looking actually takes time. It sort of requires you to slow down and repeat, go back over details that you saw that you already understood, and then maybe even go back over them again. And you start to identify these bits and pieces that weren't readily evident as soon as it came into your view. And I think, so there's a time aspect there. But I think the other thing really is that the goal of seeing is almost just, that's all it is. The goal in and of itself is to see. Whereas the goal of looking is elsewhere. It's sort of to try and understand or to remember, to create connections that can move across time and space. And you're right, when we talk about Italy particularly, you know, if we take a famous example like Michelangelo's David, if you see it, that's one thing. But if you look at it, that's when you might start to, you know, notice these little, or not even little, but large details. Like the one of his hands is way too large for his body, as is his head. And so you start to ask yourself, well, why is that? And then you can maybe go in and look at the history and realize, oh, well, this statue is actually meant to be seen from, you know, 100 feet away as it was mounted up on a building. And now it's in a museum, so we don't see it in the same way. And then that can lead you into, well, what is art? What is the purpose of art as we have it today? What is the purpose of a museum versus a public monument? I mean, there's all sorts of questions that you can ask yourself, and that can give us these interesting debates, but that mostly comes out of looking as opposed to really seeing.
Right. You're not going to get that from a photo, right? So
exactly.
I think that that's a great point. And I think it's really interesting that you say you use literature as an entryway for visiting a city when you're taking people on the tours. So how do you do that, and why is that a good way?
Well, I think that essentially, you know, literature sort of serves an important function in that it allows us to both experiment with a world that's not our own, and it also gives us a way to look at things that aren't necessarily there in front of us. You know, literature in the end, I think, much like looking, it's almost a tool, and it can almost be deployed like any other tool. You know, if you pick up the right book, you can actually look at the world and look at a city in very interesting ways. And the more information that you take in, the more ability that you have to sort of look through space and look through time to try and identify these different layers. You know, if you take a book that was written in 1500, it's obviously going to have a much different perspective on the city than we have when we visit it today. And so it just gives us another entryway into considering what's in front of us.
So, Kyle, how can we use these ideas? How can we apply them while traveling in a foreign place, in an ancient historical city? How can we apply them when you're out there sightseeing?
Well, let's just take a sort of a big example. If you walk into St. Peter's Basilica, for example, it's an amazing place. It's so large that you're almost overwhelmed by it. You feel as if it would never end. You know, its ceilings are absolutely massive. There's incredible artwork off in the corners. There's so many things that you can be overwhelmed by. And that's actually a great feeling. That's one of the more interesting feelings, I think, that we can have by traveling. But then at the same time, that feeling of being overwhelmed can lead us to think, well, this has always been here and it always will be here. But the fact of the matter is that St. Peter's hasn't been there forever. You know? And so, we have one of our tours, for example, that uses Dante's Inferno, which was written 200 years before the St. Peter's that we know today was built. And so necessarily, if you take this vision of Rome, and if you start to think about what the Vatican was or what St. John Lateran across town was at the time, you can start to think, okay, I have this massive building in front of me, and I can appreciate it not only for what it is today, but also for what it wasn't. What else was here, and how else this area was known? And I think that that's really the benefit for sightseeing, is sort of trying to keep getting more and more context, more and more information that you can then use to piece together a more complete portrait of a city.
You know, Kyle, this is fantastic. I love this way of looking at tourism and traveling and sightseeing. I think it's fantastic to go deeper and make it a little bit more rewarding, as you say. So I really appreciate you coming on and sharing this with us. And our listeners, of course, can learn more about you and the ideas and information on travel and tourism to check out your blog, as well as complete details on Scholastic Tours and their offerings at scholasticatours.com, and that's spelled S-C-O-L-A-S-T-I-C-A, scholasticatours.com. So thank you so much. Again, this is Kyle Hall.
Thank you very much, Stacey.
And this podcast is presented by Annie Jennings of the national publicity firm, Annie Jennings PR, and the creator of Jennings Wire Online Magazine. Jennings Wire is capturing the heart of America with its rich community of talented, insightful, and relevant bloggers and podcasters. So please visit JenningsWire.com and discover the blogger that is just right for you. Till next time.